Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, December 10th, 2021. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. This breaking Supreme Court allows the challenge to the Texas abortion law to go forward. Meanwhile, debt ceiling en route to being raised as the filibuster gets a brief carve out. British judge says Julian Assange is eligible to be extradited to the U.S. Federal judge rules that Trump can't shield documents from January 6th. Meanwhile, email from Meadows to Trump exposes details of the January 6th plot. In New York, New York Attorney General Tish James announces she will not be running for governor after all, dropping out of the race, and then proceeds to subpoena Trump to testify in the Trump Inc. fraud case. Inflation hits a 39-year high. It's also likely a peak. At least one Buffalo Starbucks will be unionized. Meanwhile, 1,400 Kellogg's workers reject their contract offer, as Kellogg says it's going to permanently replace them. New York City votes to give all legal residents, I should say the city council votes to give all legal residents, including non-citizens, the right to vote in local elections. In Mexico, a truck carrying migrants overturns, killing 53. Turns out the Biden administration actually did reject the idea for universal free COVID tests sent to Americans. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us. It is Friday, and joining me as always, Emma Vigeland. Hello, Emma.
Hello, Sam. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
I am well. Happy Friday.
Thank you very much. It is Friday. We're okay with that sound. I don't know. We got a little sound issue on the opening. That's fine. We will get over it. It is Friday. Oh, and I should also say I didn't introduce our guest for today. Joining us on the program today, Digby from the blog Hullabaloo, and Andy Kindler from the blog andykindler.com. I'm not sure if he ever goes there. I don't know if he's...
Does he characterize it as a blog?
I don't know if he calls it a blog. I don't even know if it's a website. I don't know if he ever updates that thing at all. That's one of the things we're going to talk to Kindler about, is what's going on with his website these days. We should say, speaking of websites, much of what we do, obviously, is consumed by people via the web, the internet, as people refer to it. Well, you could see us IRL. That's in real life.
As I started to say this, I realized I totally forgot to mention this on the show yesterday, and I wrote it in big letters in my notes, and I totally forgot. Anyway.
That's all right. We don't have that many tickets left anyways, and so it's probably good to spread it out like this. But on January 16th, we are going to be celebrating the big live show.
It'll be the biggest crowd of the Wilbur Theater of all time.
It's going to be huge. Wilbur Theater, folks, in Boston, it is, they've had amazing luminaries, and then also shows like Marc Maron will be going there, I think, sometime in the spring. But you can get your tickets right now at MajorityLive.com. Joining us so far, Natalie Scherr. Spoke to her last week. John Benjamin. I haven't talked to him in years. It's going to be awkward to have him there after all this time. Larry Murphy, also from Bob's Burgers, famous voice actor in the voice actor circles. So these guys, and of course, Larry's a Boston native, and John Benjamin's a Worcester native, Worcester, Massachusetts.
Where's that?
Coincidentally, is where I grew up as well.
Oh.
And that is about 40 miles west of Boston. And so it's sure to be fun. 3 p.m. in the afternoon, easy to fly in, fly out. Next day is Martin Luther King's birthday celebrated. And so that is a great opportunity for you to come. We get all sorts of surprises. We're already working on stuff. And so it should be pretty crazy. Speaking of crazy, where do I put my sound sheet? I thought I had that right here. Oh, here it is. This is pretty exciting and also in some ways disturbing. You know, apparently Howard Schultz's talk to some of those Starbucks workers in Buffalo just didn't stick. They didn't appreciate that they're like people in the Holocaust.
Or maybe they drew a different lesson than the one that he was trying to make them draw. I don't know.
It was a bit ambiguous as to what lesson he was trying to communicate there, but he did shoehorn the Holocaust into it. So
he did shoehorn the Holocaust, and you know, and the thing is that I think probably if he looks back on it, he may be sitting down with some of his advisors and they're going like, you know, maybe that message about like everybody sort of like having solidarity with each other as opposed to the people who are sort of managing them.
Mm.
Maybe that was not the message you wanted to communicate, Howard.
Got to rework that one.
Yeah, I think so. Here are Starbucks. Now, there were three votes. One Starbucks voted to not unionize. One, I think, has contested votes, and I don't think the result is out yet. But one, Starbucks at the Elmwood Avenue location in Buffalo, this is their reaction to voting for the union. They seem pretty excited. And this is the first Starbucks in the nation that has unionized. And obviously, you know, one shop is in and of itself not a huge event. But the idea that you could start to see maybe many shops across the country, Starbucks unionizing, it's a big deal. And you know, it was a big enough deal that Howard Schultz flew in and spoke to them directly, so they knew what kind of big deal this was.
And you mentioned that there's still an outstanding vote, but More Perfect Union reported at least yesterday that the 7 additional ballots that were challenged and will be open later, a source close to the union believes that those ballots will not change the final outcome, which was a vote to unionize the second store. So
that's pretty exciting.
It's likely that it would be 2-3, which is very exciting, obviously.
That's the era we are living in, where, you know, people returning back to work after COVID or maybe having worked through the whole thing. You know, we've talked about this in a bunch of different ways. You have a lot of people who are quitting their jobs and finding other ones. You're seeing low wage workers getting higher wages than they were pre-COVID. And so there is... We could just be in an era where workers are beginning to understand their power. And you're also seeing this stuff is contagious. I mean, it's not like Omicron level contagious, or maybe even not even Delta, but it may be somewhere around wild type level of contagious.
You're learning from Howard Schultz in order to like apply these
really bad metaphors.
Really bad metaphors to the union effort.
But the point is that I think when people see other workers successfully unionize, other workers successfully, I mean, I think there's no doubt in my mind that the Kellogg's workers, 1,400 of them who rejected the offer that came down, they saw what happened with the John Deere workers and so on. And so it's an exciting time for labor and we will see what happens. We'll get to, we're going to bring Digby on in just a moment or two, but this is exciting news. So one of today's sponsors, Sunset Lake Sebade, and I misplaced my sign. But just a reminder, sunsetlakesebade.com, left is best, one word, gets you 20% off of all their stuff. In the beginning of December, around the time, there it is, around the time when we were around Black Friday, we started a program with Sunset Lake where they were going to donate a certain percentage of their sales over that time. And we here at the Majority Report are going to match it. And we were giving the money to givedirectly.org, which was a charity I found on GiveWell, you know, several years ago. And what this charity does, you give the money and they give the money directly to people living in extreme poverty. And they allow those people to decide what's the best way to deploy those resources. Sunset Lake just announced on Twitter and on Instagram, combined, we're going to be sending over $21,000 to givedirectly.org. And so that's super exciting. This is the nature of this company. They have given thousands of dollars in support of strikes, in support of food pantries, in support of other programs that up in outside of Burlington. And they also make a great product. They have just as much integrity in their product, the smokables, the tincture, the gummies, the fudge, the coffee, the salve, the lotion. Check it out.
I've been using that lotion recently because it's dry out.
Super dry. I've been using the salve on my calves. Not to, you know,
Jesus highlight the calves. Christ.
Yeah, there it is. SunsetLakeSebade.com. Use the code LEFTISBEST. You get 20% off. Check it out. Great company, great products. You're going to enjoy it. And thank you to Sunset Lake. That couldn't have gone better with the Give Directly thing. They were fantastic throughout.
Yes, I felt like Vanna White there. That was a real one great
moment.
You
did moment. That well.
That was a great moment.
Meanwhile, another longtime listener and fan of the show was working for solar companies, did not like what he saw in terms of their practices, and so he started a consultation business, mysolarnerd.com, and basically to guide homeowners through the process of getting solar. There's a lot of homeowners that aren't aware that solar options are currently available. It is now possible to retrofit with solar panels for no money down. Most homeowners that switch over to solar see significant savings starting in their first year. And this is possible largely in part to the Solar Investor Tax Credit, which gives you a 26% tax credit. This is only, it's been extended through because of the COVID bill. This will drop down in the following year to 22%. So now is the time to do this. What does mysolarnerd.com do? Well, their mission is simple. They help you find the best solar program for your home and make the transition as easy and smooth as possible. How do they do it? They analyze your usage. They find the best equipment for your needs. They determine the incentives and financing you might qualify for, and then they project manage the process between you and the installers. They obtain the permits. They do everything that's necessary, and you end up with solar You don't want to wait on this. Some of those tax credits incentives are sunsetting. You may be eligible for some in your state. MySolarNerd.com will know. Some markets which are prone to power outages might qualify for off-grid backup solutions. And Majority Report listeners are going to get a $200 gift card upon installation of their solar system. So you go to MySolarNerd.com. You fill out the inquiry form now. Make sure you select Majority Report listener for how you heard about MySolarNerd.com to get your $200 gift card upon installation. Check it out, MySolarNerd.com. They will walk you through this process, and you will start saving money. And also, in many instances, I imagine a lot of people getting off of, saving fossil fuel at one point or in the process. So you'll be helping doing all of us a solid. MySolarNerd.com. All right. Don't forget, too, we have merch in the merch store. And justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. Check that out. And if you want to support this program, become a member. Join the MajorityReport.com. Meanwhile, want to welcome back to the program the proprietor of the Uber blog, Hullabaloo, and the, there we go. There's the Digby. It's been too long. Hi, Heather. How are you?
Hey, Sam. I'm fine. I miss you. For 5 years.
Miss you too.
I talk to you every week. And now you're just like a faint memory.
I know it. I know it. We're no longer doing the Ring of Fire, but we'll figure out something else. But I am enjoying sort of a little bit of bit of extra time off during the course of the week. Mm-hmm. So we're here with Emma. Heather, I think I neglect to say up front, too, you write at salon.com. You've been writing about Mark Meadows' book and Trump sort of congealing his power around the Republican Party in 2020. I know you've been following what's happening with January 6th. And let's talk about this because there is some crazy stuff. Mark Meadows, apparently there was an email that Mark Meadows said. And now he decided the other day that he was not going to cooperate with the January 6th commission, which I want to get your take on what that was about, because it feels like he got in trouble with Donald Trump because he told the world that Trump had COVID and tried to give it to everybody and is trying to make up in some way for this. And simultaneously, you could just say that Steve Bannon's criminal contempt charge brought by the DOJ is not going to be heard by the judge until like mid-July of 2022, which of course is dangerously close to the time that Democrats will probably lose the control of the House. Give me your take on all this.
Well, I mean, it's been kind of a wild week. A couple of weeks, starting with the leaks about Mark Meadows' new book, which I actually have read, and I can just tell anybody, don't bother. It is one of the most, smarmy, sickening, bootlicking exercises you could possibly imagine. But having said that, and I remember writing about this, years ago, when Trump first hired Meadows as his chief of staff, I'm going, whoa, really? Because, this guy is not the sharpest tool in the shed, and he really isn't. There was nothing in his life or experience or anything that would have prepared him for a job like that, which is huge. The chief of staff to the president of the United States is a gigantic job. You're basically running the government in many ways. And this guy had absolutely no qualifications to do that. His main qualification was his deep and abiding affection and loyalty for Donald Trump. And Trump has this habit of confusing that loyalty and obsequiousness for competence. He assumes if you love me, you must be great. You're great. You're great. And so he didn't really, I don't think he ever realized just how terrible Mark Meadows was at even doing what he wanted him to do, which was protect him, cover his back. And I think this book has finally awakened him to the man that he actually had in that job. Meadows also now realizes that the guy he worships, and in the book, he's a saint, he's a superman, he's just, you know, just goes on and on and on about what an incredible human being Donald Trump is. I know it's really hard to take. And, he's realizing now that, you know, he's not immune from Donald Trump's wrath. And what happened was that these are two people who really didn't know each other at all. And as a result, Meadows wrote this book. Trump blurbed it and said, hey, it's terrific. It's fantastic. And he didn't read it, of course, because he doesn't read. And he didn't task anybody.
He didn't even have an assistant read the book. Right.
No. Exactly. He trusted his boy Meadows to do the right thing. And so, of course, everybody knows now what he said in there about, and it wasn't just about the COVID thing, which is the most, I mean, honestly, it may be the worst thing Trump's ever done, which was go around knowingly spreading COVID. And I know he knew it. It's ridiculous. If the account in Meadows' book is correct, Trump was sick as a dog for days and days and days. And he went to that debate sick as a dog. He was saying, oh, he couldn't, you know, he had no energy. His ashen face was looking a little bit more like his usual bronze hue. You know, I mean, he says this, but he was sick at that debate. And, you know, if you remember that particular debate, that was the one where he acted like an animal. I mean, he was completely out of control. Chris Wallace was sitting there going, well, you know, what the hell? I mean, he couldn't control him. And he was out of his mind. Well, you know, I kind of wonder, to be honest with you, between you and me and everybody who's listening, if somebody didn't give him a little shot of steroids before.
What?
No. Oh, my God.
Never.
Well, no. Amphetamines or something like that.
I mean,
we don't know, but it's
something to we don't know. I'm guessing, speculating. Some people are saying, okay. So in any case, you know, my body's a temple. This particular, you know, this book, I think what it did was wake Donald Trump up to the fact that Mark Meadows is adult and he is regretting giving him permission to deal with the January 6th committee. Recall just a couple weeks ago, Trump put out a statement that said, about his friend Bernie Kerik, right? The former commissioner, New York police commissioner, who's also was a convicted felon whom he pardoned, that I have granted him permission to go before the January 6th committee and give them all the information that he has because they're going to have a big surprise when they see that the election was stolen. So he's granting permission to certain people to go before the committee. And I have to assume that he granted that permission to Mark Meadows, his boy, and then realized this week, once it turned out that he had totally screwed the pooch and spilled the beans on the COVID thing, that was a mistake. And he pulled him back and said, no, you can't do it. Well, it's too late because he may not. I mean, I don't know what Meadows' testimony would have brought, although considering just how incompetent he is, the idea that anybody would have ever thought he could, go up against the likes of Jamie Raskin or Adam Schiff or, you know, some of the sharp lawyers that are on the committee is kind of laughable. But all these documents, it turns out that he turned over a ton of documents. And what we now know is that in some of those documents, are really, really incriminating evidence that they were plotting this thing, including last night it was reported that there was a PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah.
That was done planned with the coup plot on it in a PowerPoint. And by the way, I saw on Twitter somebody, you know, pulled up Laura Logan's Twitter feed from January 5th. And somehow knew she had a hold of this or some preliminary version of this PowerPoint. And she was sent it out to her Twitter followers saying, this is what they're being briefed on in the Hill. So this was going out to all of their people. We know Laura Logan is one. God knows she's one of their people. And, you know, this more and more and more, it's become obvious that this is what Steve Bannon was talking about when he said, you know, get ready, strap in, you know, this thing is happening, you know, everybody, you know, all you people, you know, get lined up or whatever he was saying on his podcast. So, you know, this is, I mean, whether it's going to end up going anywhere, you know, you got me, I don't know, but it's fascinating stuff anyway.
Yeah, the PowerPoint is, and maybe these you guys can find it. It is entitled, I know it's online, I just went through it. It's entitled Election Fraud, Foreign Interference, and Options for January 6th. It was dated January 5th. It was in an email that Meadows gave to the committee. I mean, he gave all these documents probably, I don't know, weeks ago maybe? I don't know. When he thought, like, oh, I can testify. And then, oh, I'm not allowed to testify. This thing is nuts. It basically goes through Vice President Pence seats Republican electors over the objections of Democrats in states where fraud occurred. Vice President Pence rejects the electors from states where fraud occurred, causing the election to be decided by the remaining electoral votes. Or Vice President delays the decision in order to allow for a vetting and subsequent counting of all the legal paper ballots. And then it basically goes on, and then it says, you know, recommendations, brief senators and congressmen on foreign interference. We'll get to that in a second. Declare a national security emergency. I mean, foreign influence and control of electronic voting systems. Declare electronic voting in all states invalid. Legal and genuine paper ballot counts. This is, I think this is something that was put together by the MyPillow guy. And it basically says that, oh, this is the key issue that for the talking points. China has leveraged financial, non-governmental, and foreign allies, including Venezuela, to acquire influence and control the U.S. voting infrastructure in at least 28 states. Key issue in 2020, critical infrastructure control utilized as part of an ongoing globalist socialist operation to subvert the will of United States voters and install a China ally. I mean, put aside the idea that they would go forward with this, which, you know, who knows how close they were, right? I mean, it's really Mike Pence, if he was willing to go along with it. Certainly there were senators who were probably pushing him to do this, and there were certainly others. And the rally itself was supposed to be a pressure point and maybe more. And what if they – what if they had succeeded not just in overturning the election, but making the argument that China with Venezuela was not just buying ads on Facebook to interfere, but literally had control of the voting infrastructure in more than half the states? What do we do at that point with China? I mean, this is Donald Trump coup, and then how do you and not you go to war with China?
Yeah, why General Milley? Yeah, you wonder why General Milley was calling up his counterpart in China going, hey, relax, it's okay, we got this under control. I mean, you know, the fact is that this stuff was circulating around in the White House in the highest reaches, and Bill Barr had said that his greatest concern was that there would be some foreign interference, remember, in mail-in voting. That was his big thing. He was saying long before the election even. So this stuff was out there circulating. I mean, maybe the MyPillow guy sort of put this thing together, but I mean, he wasn't the one who came up with all of this. This was something that had been, you know, obviously discussed in those circles even before the election. So, you know, we're talking about a plan here. Now, you know, look, Donald Trump is basically insane about the election. He really is. He's, if you read his statements, you know, he sends out, he doesn't have a Twitter feed anymore, but he sends out statements, you know, from the desk of the former president of the United States, you know, whatever. And he sends it out to his massive mailing list. And so, and what he is obsessed with the election. I mean, it's just every day. It's like, oh, they found three more votes in, you know, in Michigan and, you know, some kind of, you know, obscure county in Pennsylvania. I mean, he's following this stuff on the right wing, in the right wing media in minute detail. And it's sick. I mean, obviously in fact, Axios reported, I think this week, that there are people that say when they go down to Mar-a-Lago to talk to him about anything, he can't concentrate on anything but the 2020 election, and his entire, you know, consciousness is devoted to the idea of him being restored to the presidency, whether it's before 2024, which is of course ludicrous, or more, you know, 2024 in the 2024 election. So, you know, you're dealing with somebody who's really kind of nuts. On the other hand, the scary part, and this came out in an article this week that by Barton Gellman in The Atlantic, which I'm sure you've talked about and everybody's been reading and blah, 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 about what he gave it kind of a holistic view of what's going on in the Republican Party nationally and across the country in various state legislatures, along with he spoke to a bunch of individual Republicans, you know, MAGA people who, you know, sort of color, you know, give color to the attitudes that are sort of driving this thing. That's beyond Donald Trump. I mean, what's happening in the state legislatures, what's even happening in Washington, it has now taken on a life of its own. It starts off with the idea of the big lie and the 2020 election, but now they have moved into, you know, every swing state, and they have targeted certain ones, the usual suspects, you know, Arizona, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, you know, all the usual. Yeah. And they've targeted those. And they have now got an army of people who are working on behalf of Donald Trump, but really on behalf of the Republican Party. This is a power grab by the party now. It's not just Donald Trump. They're putting in place all these election laws that are designed basically to give power to Republican office holders to overturn elections. I mean, that's all there is to it. If you can't view it any other way, it goes way beyond gerrymandering and all the usual shenanigans that you find in our election system. This is something really new. And one of the main aspects of this is this thing called the independent state legislature doctrine, which actually originated, well, I don't know if it originated here, but it was first sort of came to people's attention in Bush versus Gore. William Rehnquist and Antonin Scalia wrote in their concurrence with the Bush versus Gore opinion that state legislatures have a plenary right to decide the electors. And how that's being interpreted, and rightly so if you believe Rehnquist and Scalia, who were explicitly making this argument, that state legislatures have a right to overturn elections. And essentially that there is no, you know, inherent right. You remember Scalia very famously said, there is no right to vote in the Constitution. Right. So, I mean, it comes from this idea that they have a right to, you know, and of course they'll make an excuse. I mean, people are sort of, when they talk about this, they're sort of acting like the state legislature just going to say, well, we're overturning it. No, they'll come up with an excuse. And all of that has been built up over a long period of time before Donald Trump ever came on the scene, that there's massive voting fraud in the country and that they have to step in to ensure fairness and integrity. And so they're going to overturn elections.
Right. Now, the predicate's been laid for the idea that there's massive fraud.
Right. Right. And they want, you know, this is something that their people and the people who, you know, who follow them. And by the way, this is being backed. It's not Sidney Powell or Rudy Giuliani or Lynn Wood or these other, you know, cracking lunatics they had working on the 2020 post-election fraud stuff. These are major lawyers in the Federalist Society, people like that who are working on this stuff, who have, you know, recognized. I mean, what Gellman's piece points out is that they saw all the flaws in the system. Donald Trump was this, you know, he was this chaos agent who came in. And for whatever bad or good he did as, you know, personally for them, what he did do was expose every, you know, little hole in the dike in our rickety electoral system. And they are now setting about exploiting that, looking at themselves as a minority, you know, in the country for the near future, they realizing this is the way to do it. And it's actually become a systematic thing within the Republican Party. It's no longer Trump just ranting and raving down in Mar-a-Lago. These are people who've actually decided within the group. And here's where you can see the effects of that already in just stuff that happened this week. Like, you know, McConnell and Schumer worked out a deal to raise the debt ceiling. And, you know, everybody knows that debt ceiling had to be raised, right? I mean, Republicans understand that. McConnell understands that, you know, it doesn't look good for him if the Republicans block the raising of the debt ceiling. You know, all the normal political, you know, the political dynamics were in play. But they had a real revolt on their hands that this deal, it was designed by McConnell to allow his own people to save face and not have to take a vote that they don't want to take to raise the debt ceiling, and continuing this fiction that raising the debt ceiling is somehow akin to spending new money, you know, all the rest of it. But Lindsey Graham went into the meeting, according to The Hill, and that they had with the Republican caucus. And he said, Donald Trump's going to be really upset about this. Mitch McConnell is leading us up a hill and we're going to be shot in the back. And somebody, you know, I mean, this is how they talk about, this is their own party, right? And then some other senator is quoted as saying, yes, it's terrifying and God have mercy on our souls. I mean,
we should be clear. This is for voting for a procedural vote, which is going to allow the Democrats to unilaterally lift the debt ceiling, which is a pro forma thing. And they're literally talking about it as if, I don't know, they're saying the same words that, like, probably, I don't know, the guys who flew the atomic bombs over, like, I mean, really, they're... They think they're jumping out of an airplane, essentially, without a parachute.
Yeah, that's how they feel about it. And, you know, and Lindsey Graham, of all people listening, they're saying, well, they did manage to do it, right? I mean, McConnell has enough clout. And there is enough real political, I mean, Trump doesn't know what he's talking about, right, when it comes to real political strategy like that. It's way above his head. So they kind of know, but they're terrified. And I shouldn't say, you know, they are terrified and they're complicit. They're both, I think, at this point. I mean, they are seeing the advantages and exploiting the advantages that Trump is giving them. And they're also terrified of coming into his.
And there's probably there's people who are on both sides of that. And some people have different makeup of that. I mean, and this is important. And I just want to add to that sort of. I remember the clip of Raffensperger, I think it is, or was it the guy in Georgia? Is that his name?
Yeah.
The Secretary of State.
Yes.
Who was on Mehdi Hassan's show and refusing to say that he wouldn't vote for Donald Trump. And this is a guy who's received his family, receiving death threats because of Donald Trump. And the fear is, you know, particularly the political fear is real in terms of Trump, but they're also, I think many of them are just inclined, like they're like Trump. I mean, so it's, you know, some are, you know, to the extent that there's anybody left in that party who's not like Trump. And again, you know, this is stuff we were saying 5 or 6 years ago, is that it's not that they became like Trump. It's just that Trump was the fulfillment of what they were becoming or had become. And so these machinations that you're talking about, the idea that they're never going to do this. Now they're perfectly willing to do it if they can get away with it.
Yep. They're doing it. And in fact, Gelman points out in his piece in The Atlantic, an element of this that's really important to recognize. He says Donald Trump has created a mass movement in this country, and it's an unusual one. It's not, you know, usually you find young people and, you know, sort of, you know, people who are sort of disenfranchised, right, involved in such a thing. And what he points out is that when they went and looked at the demographics of the people that, you know, stormed the Capitol on January 6th, these were mostly middle-aged, middle-class, you know, semi and affluent people, small business people. These are not fringe people. They're very mainstream members of the Republican Party. That, you know, now it's true that it was a small number, but they're representative, as Gelman points out, of maybe 20, 25 million people. And that mass movement, many of whom are extremely hostile, have violent tendencies, as we know, because they are armed to the teeth. And that is an element, I think, that pervades this whole question, which is this, and January 6th really, I think, brought that home for everyone, which is that, you know, there is a group in this country who are convinced that they have been denied their rightful place, and that Trump having the election stolen is a slap in their face, and they are willing to you know, take their country back by any means necessary. And that includes violence, that violent undercurrent, you know, like this woman down in Georgia who was working in the elections there. She just sued a bunch of people, including the Gateway pundit, I think, and some other, you know, right wing figures, who was an election worker. The threats were so bad, the FBI told her she had to leave her home. You know, she had to leave her home. She and her family had to actually, you know, move because they were being threatened. It turns out today I saw a thing where Kanye West PR person was down there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we have that sound?
I believe we do. Yes.
Yeah, let's watch this. This is amazing. This is as Digby set up, this is a woman who was an election. I mean, you know, call her an official, I guess. Yeah, an election worker in Georgia. And these lunatics have become convinced that the entire election turned on what this woman does. The FBI has basically said, you got to go into hiding, more or less.
And we should say, too, that this conflict or this interaction happened in this Georgia election worker's, in a suburban home. This was not in the actual facility where they were counting ballots, which is what I thought when I saw the headline initially.
Yeah, this is body cam footage from the Cobb County Police Department. And you have Kanye West, publicist, is speaking with Ruby Freeman, who is the Georgia election worker. Do we know why Kanye West's publicist was doing this?
Reuters says the visitor, Trevion Kuti, gave her name but didn't say she worked for West, a longtime billionaire fan of Trump. She said she was sent by a high-profile individual. And she basically says, confess to Trump's voter fraud allegations or people would be at her home in 48 hours and she'd go to jail. That's what she said to the election.
Watch this.
Thank you.
No problem.
Good evening. How are you? Thank you so much for agreeing to meet with us. We didn't want to frighten you, but we had to find you within this time bracket. I'm here because I received a call. Not that I didn't know about the situation before, because I had heard that it wasn't a serious concern for me because I had asked you what to do. We would like to let you know, first and foremost, we have put in place a way to move you, to secure you from what may be compromised in the next 48 hours. And we have probably 48 hours to move you, and do it on your schedule. I cannot say what specifically will take place. I just know that it will disrupt your freedom and the freedom of one or more family members. I would like to connect now on the phone Harris and Floyd, who would be taking this situation to a detailed level for you to let you know exactly what investing. What choices you have, whether you choose or not to deal with us, I am not your enemy. This is Garrison, he works with me. You are a loser for a party that needs to tie you up. I work with some of the biggest names in the industry. Crisis is my thing. What they don't want to do for you is create another crisis. I'm going to call Harrison Floyd. I'm going to put him on speaker. His name is Harrison Floyd. Is Harrison Floyd. He's a vet who works in crisis management. I'm very proud of him. Authoritative powers to give you protection that you need. The officer, you know, this is at this moment a conversation between private citizens. I'm hoping that you are trusting that this information doesn't go any further. I have to honestly advise, I don't know her background.
I can step over there if you're comfortable. That's fine?
Yeah, I want her to be comfortable, but I also want to advise her that there are federal people who are involved here that I don't know who is connected to who. And I really need for her to be as nonchalant as possible with this conversation that we are going to have so that if she does make a decision, she's protected in her decisions.
First of all, nonchalant does not mean what that woman thinks it means. But aside from that, this is bat crap crazy stuff. But there's somebody issuing what otherwise somewhat normal people might think is like these edicts. And well,
she's speaking the language of a Hollywood fixer type, but of trying to apply it basically to, but she's also crazy. There's that. But like, this is kind of the way people might be twisting arms in backroom deals. And she's trying to apply it to just this frightened Georgia election worker and is name dropping. Like when she said Harrison Ford, I said, okay, we're moving into cute. Every celebrity is connected to every other celebrity, and it all means something.
Tom Hanks has sent me.
Yeah.
But this is, I mean, this is what's going on out there. I mean, there's a lot of these people.
She's a 62-year-old temporary election worker.
Right. I mean, this is happening a lot. I just read one of the healthcare workers that the head of the California Medical Association, which, they basically all they do is they certify doctors and, monitor the medical profession. She's been surveilled for weeks now by some group that's following her and her family all over the place. And they finally told the cops and the state legislature's involved. I mean, and it's some right-wing group going after, that's going after the medical profession over vaccines and mask mandates and what have you. This stuff is happening everywhere. The school boards, public health people, election workers. That's what I'm talking about. This thread of violence that's going through here. It's in violence and intimidation. And when you think about the reaction to, say, Kyle Rittenhouse and what we just observed, where the right wing just is treating him. I mean, he immediately flew down to Mar-a-Lago, right? And he's now hailed as a hero. You have to sort of fold that in and recognize that that's a big part of Trump's power. And you can see that playing on the elected officials certainly in state legislatures and places like that. Much less it seems to be happening in the U.S. Senate. They said, Lindsey Graham said, we'll be shot in the back. I mean, I assume he meant that as a metaphor, but, I'm not so sure it's not a literal fear of a lot of these people.
I want to just, touch a little bit about the Democratic response to all this. I mean, the way that they're dealing with this, because, I think I saw this first report about the Meadows, email, which had this, PowerPoint, from Brian Schatz, the senator from Hawaii. And it was, and our old friend Atrios was commenting on it. And he makes a point that I think we've probably made many times on the show, but it bears repeating. If the Democrats seem to be waiting for some third party, ostensibly I don't know, the heir to David Broder, whoever that is, some like a conventional wisdom, I don't know if it's Dana Milbank or Chuck Todd or who is it, whoever it is. To come in and decree that this is wrong and the press should get excised about this and exercised about this and should be, concerned. And the Democrats seem to be just sort of like waiting on some level. They're talking about in very general terms. You got Joe Biden out there, talking about the concerns he has about democracy around the world. I mean, maybe there should be a focus on what's going on in this country. There should be a little bit more of aggressiveness by the Department of Justice on these things. And Democrats, they cannot communicate to the American public that the Republican Party is off the rails if they are also communicating to the American public that we're going to work with these people and we need a strong Democrat. I mean, you cannot do both at the same time. And it's like they're waiting for someone. Atrius had a post. Where are the celestial hall monitors? As if somebody's going to come down. There's like some referees that are going to come down and go like, we've been watching all of this. And frankly, the Republican Party seems to be out of control. I think the Democrats have done a good job and not, making a big issue of it. But this is what's going on. Like, that's not the way this works. and they don't seem to be doing much in this regard.
It's insane. And I agree with you. And I, you know, I've been reluctant to sort of, I mean, I get it, you know, Joe Biden, you know, the media and everybody else, Joe Biden was elected to make, bring things back to normal. He's supposed to, they're supposed to restore norms, and everybody wanted just to be able to forget about politics and Donald Trump traumatized, blah, blah, blah. You know, I get it. I understand the pressure, the pressure on that. But that's just not reality. And people can say that all they want. And maybe people did want Joe Biden to bring things back to normal. He cannot do that. It's not normal. Everything is really abnormal. And the Democrats have to start protecting the American people. I mean, they're at some point or another, they've got to do, you know, they've got to do what is necessary. Now, I agree with you. They seem to be waiting for something. I think there are a couple of things. I think they are waiting for the, you know, whatever they are going to finally, it's finally the American, they convince the American people that Donald Trump and the Republicans are bad. I guess that's true. I also think they kind of think that is if Donald Trump, he'll just go away, if you know what I mean. He's, you know, an elderly person, and perhaps, you know, this whole thing might just solve itself, if you know what I mean.
But didn't Joe Biden say this? Didn't Joe Biden say this before the election? Within 6 months after Trump is gone, they're going to revert back to, and it is,
Over and over again, this happened. They keep waiting for Trump to implode, and he never does. I mean, it's the same thing. It's like after the election, that whoever that fool was who said, let's just let him cry it out and let him have his moment, and then he'll leave quietly. I mean, this idea that total resistance to accepting who this person is and accepting the power he has over millions of people and accepting the fact that the Republican establishment is completely in its thrall and recognizing now how powerful this thing is, and that feeling that they're jumping on the bandwagon, those who had you know, not really done it. I do not understand this, and it's increasingly frustrating, because, you know, time is wasting. And, you know, the January 6th Commission, I get it, I'm all for it, I want them to do all this stuff, but what is the end game here? What, are they going to issue a report?
Yeah,
and we're going to go, yeah, they tried to steal the election, and that was really terrible, and Trump was in on it, and we're all going to go, yeah. And then what happens? I mean, this is the thing. I don't know what the end game is. Now, most frighteningly, I have heard people, you know, people on, you know, Brian Williams' show and different strategists and whatever say, well, what we really need to do is overwhelm them at the ballot box. Well, that's really great. Good luck with that, because they've got a bunch of people. You know, they've installed a bunch of people in the election offices that are going to make that impossible. They're going to be counting the votes. So that head in the sand idea is ridiculous.
And also, how do you get them to the ballot box?
Exactly.
How do you get them to the ballot box?
Who's going to do it?
You can't just say everybody's got to go. You got to give them a reason. You got to show them. Let me ask you this too. And there's clearly some major difference in the understanding of what happened on that day between the U.S. military, particularly a couple of generals, and the National Guard, like to the point where apparently two more national. I mean, first we had 2 days ago a former National Guard colonel wrote a something like 35-page memo detailing how and calling two of these generals, one of whom is Flynn's brother, unmitigated liars in the way that they have presented this stuff. There is now apparently an Army report that was obtained by Politico, and that's the way two more D.C. National Guard officials have taken a look at this. One of them is the sergeant at arms now in the House, this guy Walker, you know, and his job is to do security for the area. And he's saying this, there's like made up stuff in this, like that involves me even, that involves Walker, not me. But we could be looking at just sort of like a CYA situation which if, you know, we have a CYA situation, we should really hold those people to account for what they're trying to cover, you know, for their asses that they're trying to cover. But that's the best case scenario, right? Where it's like, these guys weren't, I mean, they may have just messed up and made the wrong decision, or they may have been influenced to make the wrong decision at that moment in terms of sending help. And I, you sort of get the sense that maybe we should know that, because they're clearly lying about the situation that took place. And we should really understand why that is. And again, this is another one of the things, like, you know, it's reported in Politico, but if the leadership in the House and the Senate doesn't stop everything for this, there's no way to communicate to the American public that there's something wrong. It's not enough to go like, our democracy is in peril and blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, we're going to try and, you know, negotiate on this defense, bill. We're going to join hands, and it's going to be a kumbaya moment for, you know, an $800 billion defense bill. I mean, this is not a message that's being sent out. This is a mishmash.
Oh, it is. And, you know, and like you said, you know, Biden having this, you know, democracy summit, it's like, you know, that's just some kind of weird, you know, performative, you know, little Zoom call, basically, that is designed to say a bunch of stuff, but doesn't actually do anything. Now, you know, look, I recognize the limits with the U.S. Senate. The 50-50 Senate is a disaster because of Joe Manchin and some other, you know, quasi-Republican Democrats who are holding up things like, you know, the John Lewis bill and things like that. I get it. But, you know, that's part of the messaging as well that is going awry. There is power in the presidency. There's power in the party. There's power that, you know, I don't see a lot of pressure on people like Joe Manchin on those issues and making it clear over and over again. I mean, you know, if Trump can do it, you know, he pressured, you know, and granted, he didn't get everything he wanted either. But this is an existential threat that we're talking about. This isn't, you know, this is like just saying, hey, you know, yeah, we know that, you know, the Soviet Union is about to launch nuclear weapons. It's 1964 and they're about to launch nuclear weapons. But, you know, hey, it'll be disturbing and we don't really know what to do. So we're just going to ignore it. You cannot do that. This is serious stuff. And you know, I know that it's tempting to dismiss Donald Trump as a clown, and he is a clown, and the people around him are clowns. And we all laugh about it and it's really funny and late night comics make fun of him. But this thing is happening on a sort of a structural level now. This isn't
It's just a clown show. The problem is we're in a clown show and this guy is King Clown.
And he's King Clown, and the whole system has become a clown show. And yet the system is really powerful, and it has the ability to actually, you know, that, I mean, like, keep bringing up Barton Gellman's piece, but it's important because he sort of, you know, brought the whole thing into focus, which is that, you know, January 6th was a run through. And we're talking about the ability to do this again. And they're going to try some stuff again in 2022. They're trying these things out. I mean, Democrats know this. They're looking at it. They can see it. And yet it's just like they're, you know, this impotence is what's killing them, or at least perceived impotence, because as you pointed out, who's going to vote for this? I mean, it, you know, people are going to withdraw to their lives and go, it's nothing I can do. We'll just have to ride this out, you know, see what happens. Cause you know, they, you know, work their asses off in 2018 and 2020 voting for people they didn't particularly love. And, you know, there was no real kind of, you know, activist passion in the sense that, wow, you know, we're really making progress here. It was purely just, we've got to stop Donald Trump and I'll vote for Abigail Spanberger if that's right. What it takes to, you know, to get the House. You know, I mean, that was the way people were, or Joe Biden for that matter, you know, I'll vote for him. Okay. I didn't want him, but you know, whatever, I'll do it. And you figure that was going to be the message from the people, from the base of the Democratic Party was, you know, look, you know, it wasn't just to stop him. It was to vanquish this movement, to end this assault on democracy. And suddenly it's completely stalled out. And it's very, very worrisome. I mean, you know, it's easy to be flippant about this, but I mean, I got to say, it is really worrisome to watch this. I mean, maybe I'm watching it too closely and it's giving me a distorted view of it. But I feel that we're just not in the fact that the Democratic Party is not taking this more seriously. I mean, even on the gerrymandering, Sam, they, right. You know, like in a place like Maryland, they could have cut out their one Republican district. They could have done it. They're not in that kind of, you know, they don't have a commission or whatever. They have one Republican district that's a Democratic state. The rest are Democrats. They could have gerrymandered him out. They didn't. Why? Why would anyone do that? I mean, that's insane to me. And they have to, why can't they pull out the stops? The Republicans are doing it everywhere. Look at what's happening in Ohio. I mean, they're basically turned, you know, Democrats are now, you know, in these little tiny, you know, droplets of districts around, and they're going to have less and less representation. Texas, you know, they gerrymandered out all the Latino and black districts down there. And the Democrats just don't seem to have the stomach for this. And that is really, I mean, who's going to do it? It's not going to be the celestial beings. You know, there aren't any. They're not there. They're AWOL or they're on Trump's side. I don't know.
Sorry, Virginia. Heather, pardon, always a pleasure and slightly very often a little bit depressing. Well, every now and then we have a better news, but this is disturbing. It's we'll touch base again. We do not see you before the New Year's, which is very possible at this point, being a couple of weeks away. We will see you in 2022.
Okay. Well, happy holidays to both of you, and have a great new year, too.
Thanks. Happy holidays, Heather.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, folks. Let's continue on with the program, speaking about someone that we will not see for the rest of 2021 after this very moment. Andy Kindler is connecting to the show right now.
You know you can't go wrong. His ancestors wrote the God Bless America song. A true Obama bot, and he believes Obama can never be wrong. Yeah, AndyKindler.com. You made me laugh so hard, I had to write you your own theme song, and it can't laugh.
Well, Andy seems to have missed his own theme song.
Yeah, he's still slowly connecting. What's going on?
He's still connecting to audio.
And video. Do we know what's happening? Wait.
There he is.
A pleasure.
Hey, please turn your radio off. What am I doing now?
Look at you. You have really upgraded that office of yours.
What does it say? What does my name say?
Andy Kindler?
No, Andy D. I was able to bring the people in from Zoom. Last time I was here, I had my poker name up there. Andy D.
Yeah.
Wait, why is your poker name Andy D?
It's not, Sam. Play along. Didn't you take any improv classes? Yes, and it's also cloudy.
Oh, yes, well, Andy.
Thank you,
Andy.
Oh, yeah, thank you, Emma. Finally, somebody at the show who cares about me personally, not just for my hot political takes.
Andy.
Bob Dole was a lion. He was the lion. The lion of the Senate. Even when he turned racist at the end and
fell in love with...
Oh, no, I mean like real... No, I'm sorry. I mean, like, even when he went ultra racist, he could have at the end said, look, this Trump guy is bothering me. But no, he went the other way. He played up to his racism at the end.
Of course.
He was a lion. A lion.
Okay. Ugh. God, the only thing I thought about when they were like sort of praising him was just like, how gross is it going to be with Kissinger? That's the thing.
I just hope James Meacham. I'm near James Meacham.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Emma. I cut off Emma. Emma, what did you say?
I just said, I mean, like, it was such a disgusting spectacle seeing Mike Pence and Dick Cheney hobnobbing in the audience today. I caught a little bit of that before we went on air. Like, we're going to see the same thing with Dick Cheney, too, and Kissinger.
Dick Cheney, in so many ways. That's the thing, when these people die, how do you come up with, it's almost impossible to say something positive about Bob Dole. You have to look. You have to go back to the World War II things. You know, my Uncle Sandy was in World War II, but then he didn't turn into a right-wing hack.
A-hole. Right.
A-hole. Yeah, can I curse here?
Well, I mean, sure. I mean, you can. I think people are here to see Andy Kim.
Sam, are you okay today?
Yeah,
you seem just put off by the fact that I'm all set up over here.
No, I'm admiring. I'm trying to get a look at what's going on there. Like, it really does. I can't.
This
quite,
is what happens when you're 65.
I've just
Sam.
Not been able to figure out what is going on behind you. Every time you come on, like, why is there a?
It looks like
there's like a shrine. It looks like it's like
it's a shrine to me. It's a shrine
you're
to
a
me.
Funeral home. But why is there? Why is there a tablecloth?
This is. I set this up. This is my wife, Susan, and I spent hours in here.
No, but please.
And then when we were done, we started to work with the Zoom.
But what? But what is? I don't understand what's going on with the tablecloth.
It's a shrine. Let me I'll get one item for you. Don't go anywhere.
No, I'm not, it's not even the items. It's the tablecloth. Is that a plastic tablecloth? What's underneath there? Is that a table?
It's an antique doll.
What are the Andy, what are the other Zoom calls that you get on?
I do the majority report. And
I just want to know, like, what is going on behind there? That, like,
well, what do you want? You want me to have a Thomas Kincaid back there? What would you like?
I don't know what that means.
Oh, but come on, Emma, tell him what a Thomas Kincaid is.
I will not, and it's definitely not because I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, why are the master of light? The master.
Why
of
are
light.
The flowers dead?
Oh, that's one of our signature pieces. We sell these on eBay. Dead flowers, and you can have it without. I'll send you a bootleg with the Rolling Stones song, but I can't send you the Rolling Stones. Send me dead flowers. Why am I doing this bit?
What? Andy?
Hey, do you like my haircut?
Yeah.
If you don't, wait 2 hours.
Andy,
my wife keeps cutting it.
I see. I know. I've been there. I got my first haircut of COVID. Like a week ago.
You mean you had other people's hands? You had people's Omicron hams?
It was pre Omicron.
How can they predict these numbers? How do they know that it's going to be a Delta next? The world's stupidest man continues.
Andy, I should tell you this. I wanted to thank you. The last time you were on, you were talking about all the shots that you had gotten. And you said that you had gotten the shingle shot. You and
shingle
I
shingle does
both,
what? That's the commercial on TV.
I didn't see that.
But you haven't seen that commercial?
I it inspired me, and I got my first shingle shot right after on that day of the show.
And that is so. Now that means that you're almost due for the second one. What were you hesitating? Oh, just age. I forget. I'm much older. Right. You know, I started the Denny's senior menu when I was 55. I got the AARP mailings coming in when I was 60.
Right. Well, I'm at the Denny's level now. I'm getting the discount at the Denny's. That is good.
Am I 10 years older than everybody? I thought there'd be somebody who I started with that I would be maybe 3 years older than.
Bob Dole is your contemporary, isn't he? I mean, was it?
You know, he was so funny, Bob Dole. He was always so funny. And his racism was old school. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, no. He really took the time.
He kept it in his pants. All right, folks. I'm sorry about that last statement.
Andy, we have today, not sure.
You keep announcing things like it's going to be something big. Take it away, Sam.
Well, we're happy to announce today that we have a clip of a guy who I think he's a little bit, I think he came up a little bit after you, Jim Brewer, who has
You know, some people are late bloomers, late brewers. Late in life, some people get more closed. Some people open up like a flower.
And what's he doing?
You know, first of all, the guy was so intellectually funny early on. I remember all of his wordplay bits. Jim Brewer got on Saturday Night Live with this. I'm a goat boy.
Yeah.
I'm a goat boy. And yet they wouldn't put me on the show. Say that I was too Jewish.
Well, a lot of us got that. Here is an interview.
I can't wait to hear this.
All right. What's this interview? Who's doing the interview, Bradley?
They're canceling. They canceled me. Absolutely canceled me.
He's speaking.
It's Clay Clark. He's like a business coach. He's the guy who's the proprietor of the Reawaken America tour that Brewer is on now.
Okay, so here's an interview, and then we're going to see. This is the Reawaken. I mean, at one point, Brewer, I feel like he went on Rogan and realized, like, wait a second. Mm-hmm. I mean, I imagine that Brewer is probably anti-vax just because...
he doesn't understand it.
Yeah, I mean, and then he's like, oh, wait a second. This is going to be the first time in a couple of decades that I'm going to be able to sort of, like, get back to where I was, at least marginally, when I was on Saturday Night.
Comedically, you mean?
No. Like, well, maybe. God,
I thought you were talking about his career. What are you talking about?
I'm talking about, like, he realized, like, he's like, wait a second. This is a cash cow for me. And so then... He made a big deal of, like, I'm not going to allow a vaccine mandate in my shows. And then the next thing you know, he's going on. What is the tour called?
The Reawaken America Tour.
Oh, my God.
And here is the interview that precedes the tour.
Get her done, tour.
Can you talk to me about comedy and why comedy is, or maybe you don't agree, but why comedy is truly one of the last places where completely free speech is allowed.
The jester was the greatest, most important person since the beginning of time. Because the jester comes, he kind of brings his message, people laugh, and then he leaves. And hopefully some people go, hey, what did that guy just say? comedy is the only thing that heals,
Pause it one second. I just said there's a couple of things I want to check in with you about, Andy, at this point. First off, the idea that he jumped in so quickly, the gesture, he's had this, you know, the gesture's been here since the beginning of time. I mean, not really.
Maybe not, the
1400s, Matt, would you say? Maybe the jesters? But, you know, probably not before then.
Yeah.
He also said the jester is the most important person since the beginning of time. Not that they've just been around. But
Jesus Christ was a jester.
We do. I mean, he wore that pointy, colorful hat with the bells on each end.
He was riffing. He was definitely riffing. And I just wanted, I think we could all tell that and this looks astounding to me, Jim Brewer's had some work done, but not on his act.
Whoa.
Let's go back. Because
was that too much?
He also said that laughter or humor or gesture is the only thing that heals. It feels like there's one other thing that heals, and that would be like medicine.
Yes, that's right. Laughter's
medicine might also heal.
Yeah, laughter is the best medicine, but not for certain diseases.
But not the only medicine. And it also doesn't inoculate you from getting a virus. But let's go back a little bit and pick it up from there.
Jester is the greatest, most important person since the beginning of time. Because the jester comes, he kind of brings his message, people laugh, and then he leaves. And hopefully some people go, hey, what did that guy just say? Comedy is the only thing that heals.
That's not true.
That can also make you think. And
it's the only
if
thing.
You shut down that, and it's the last thing with free speech, which is why if you get, it's like any form of art, you can't
pause
just
it for
say,
one second. Pause hey, it for one second. The jester, just to be clear, the jester is not a magician, is he? Like I know you're like, how come the jester's coming in and going?
Juggling, Sam. He's juggling.
Yeah, I mean, often there was like little people, and they like imbued them with sort of magical characteristics, and they do some juggling too. But I just want to say, like, this jester's and they're the only people allowed free speech. Like, imagine jesters coming in and just all their jokes were about how unfairly judged and oppressed jesters are as a class. Jesters aren't allowed to say what they actually want to
They
anymore.
Literally couldn't say anything, right? The whole point was that they were there to entertain the monarch.
Well, they could crack jokes and stuff like that, but I'm just saying, like, these guys say they have free speech now that they've made this turn, and all they do is complain about how unfairly, you know, like, silent jesters are.
Oh, don't forget, at the beginning of time, though, They were riffing on the cave paintings at the beginning exactly. of time. They said, who drew this?
Right. I mean, they're supposedly the jesters would come in and sort of sneak in a little bit of social commentary because the king would otherwise lop their head off. And yes. they would have to be in the context of a joke so that the king could hear these things. But instead of like coming in and talking about how the, you know, the peasants need health care, they're coming in and going like, super tough out there for jesters.
okay. When are they going to get off my back?
Exactly. Continue.
Shut down that. And it's the last thing with free speech, which is why if you get, it's like any form of art. You can't just say, hey, here's my new thing. It's called a phone. You're going to have a million different reactions. You can't lump it in one sum and go, we don't like the phone because it's just offensive. And what is offensive? I even talk about in the new special. What's offensive? Defining the gender of a potato head toy? Is it going to war?
Racism is offensive.
Come home with no legs. Is that offensive? Is that on the front line? There's many, you can't define, is it food that gives you cancer? Are we going to put what exactly is offensive? So,
oh man,
comedy
he shouldn't go on TV.
Comedy is the most important element of human existence, if you ask me. It is a thing that can heal you from just the worst tragedy in life, the worst sickness you're dealing through. If you don't have comedy, you're in serious trouble. You need to be humbled. You need humility in life. And that is the one of the essence of life. Faith, comedy, you need
This can't be the first question he's asked. Rolling. The first question, right?
He's rolled in faith and humility into comedy. Like, that's all you need. You need comedy. That's the most important thing with faith and humility.
And he couldn't be less funny. Couldn't be less funny in this particular clip, right? Let me tell you why humor is so important.
With the phone? With the phone? Yeah, I mean, offensive with the phone. Is that offensive? It's just,
racism is just a communication device, right? Is that what he's saying?
I couldn't make a lot of what he was saying there, other than like comedy is the most important thing, according to the comedian, and faith.
Maybe that just wasn't the right medium for it, right? I mean, he's meant to be on stage. He's not meant.
Yes,
that's true.
Is that the end of the interview?
Yeah, that is the end of it, and we probably should just see, just to be fair, even though I'm now seeing he's beginning to be trending on Twitter now, so maybe just people can't stop laughing, like, what some of this act is on the America First Tour.
To some Brewer Praxis.
Let's see the jester in action.
American faith. That's not, here we go.
You know what a cockatoo is? A cockatoo in the...
Oh. Loving it. These guys' Bluetooth earbuds in.
Look at all those different types of white people.
This looks like a great, great crowd.
And that's what everyone's become.
Yes, that is what everyone's become.
Little cockatoos staring at the screen. Facts and figures, facts and figures. Dr. Fauci, Dr. Fauci.
Oh, my God.
Oh. trust the science. Trust the science.
Oh, my God. The story is Jack Nicholson.
Specialist, specialist. Numbers going up. Numbers going up. One mask, two masks. Fascinated. Double fa-
I don't know about you, but I feel like I've been healed.
That's hilarious.
My God. You know, that's the thing is that, you know, without comedy, we would not have the truth that talking about double masking or getting vaccinated is like being a bird.
Right.
Yeah, get your shots. You won't be hospitalized if you get a vaccine.
You know what's great about that bit is no matter what happens in the future, he's always going to be able to do that bit. It could be talking about floating cars or whatever it is. We're all just orbs now. He could be doing this for decades from now and just fit any other things in it that he wants to say.
You ever see a Democrat or two? Climate change.
Where? Half the country's under the water. Half the country.
Rush Limbaugh got a Medal of Honor.
Okay, look. The guy has never been. The thing that's pathetic about it, and it's sad, it would be sad if it wasn't so funny to me, is he is a comedian who never had a sentence in his act. Never a sentence. He pitched Goat Boy like, So now he's trying to get with it. He thinks now he's awake. He's politically aware. He's getting into that Adam Carolla area.
Right. I mean, I still think that's an amazing, I don't know if his whole act is that, just he does every joke in the context of if he's a cockatoo, but he could have gone back in time. He could be at the Civil War and just be like, they're going to take Richmond. You're going to take Richmond. You know, like, just do anything as a cockatoo voice and it would be just as hilarious.
Well,
you guys don't seem to be appreciating the fact that it's basically like a Swiss Army knife act. You can apply it to every, like there is talent in making it that applicable.
Well, he's constantly doing like it's the dumb guy he's doing, but it's him. And I don't mean that as an intellectual thing because my father made me feel like I was stupid sometimes. So I don't mean it that way, but. I mean that this is the way he claims to talk normally.
Yeah. I mean, I'm reminded of when I used to watch Half Baked at sleepovers, and Jim Brewer was so funny because of this very low common denominator. Hey, man, yeah, that's.
And look, can you believe it? Chappelle, look at the two people in that movie. Yeah. Chappelle. Now you hear the name Chappelle, and you think of anti-trans material, and not even material. I mean, what happened to these? To the two greatest lights of our industry, Chappelle and Jim Brewer.
They both something must have happened on the set of Half Baked. That
you should have known. But like Sam, you knew that. Did you start? I mean, I didn't start in New York, even though I'm from New York. But this was like Jim Brewer's like at the clubs on the island.
I never knew Brewer. I mean, Chappelle and Neil Brennan wrote Half Baked. In my apartment, I was roommates with Neil Brennan at the time. But Brewer, I never knew, although I think we shared a manager. And you know, look, Brewer went on to, he sort of disappeared and did like a radio show. I think it was on Sirius.
I was on his radio show and then he was just, how's it going, Andy?
Yeah, he was just a guy who just liked the party, I think. Mm-hmm. And, I think he's probably, you know, I don't know, maybe he's stopped partying and he's got the God Squad thing going right now. I think it seems like.
Is that the tour, the American Faith tour?
Who's on this tour? Can you get us more information on the tour? Because is he's the jester, and apparently who are the other people on the tour with him who are also truth-telling, but they're not gestures. I thought that was,
There's only seven right-wing comedians.
Well, Michael Flynn's involved, so you have...
Yeah, there's Michael Flynn, there's the MyPillow guy. Like, who are all these people?
Well, I see
Roger Stone.
Yeah, Alex Jones.
Alex Jones is
in
there?
This is supposed to be like a Sergeant Pepper takeoff?
I don't understand what this is. Are all these people on tour?
No, I think it's a Sergeant Pepper takeoff. And you see Brewer in the bottom left, right? He doesn't usually do physical humor, but in this particular case, he's going with a face there.
Clay Clark's Reawaken America tour.
It's a little busy, I might, you know.
Who's the guy in the front, though?
It's like a 35-hour show. Look at all the people they have on there.
Well, it's
I don't understand what's going on.
It's a three-day show.
Oh, is that what it is? Or yeah. No?
MAGAPALOOZA?
Yes, December 9th and 11th.
Okay. But, so to be clear, we should be clear about this.
Yeah.
It's not a tour. It's not going anywhere.
It's in one place for three days.
Called the tour.
Sam, this is Dallas is the first stop. It's Dallas, Phoenix, Canton, Ohio, San Diego, Redmond, Oregon.
It's the racist thunder tour.
So this is rolling like conference that they're having.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I need to hear. I will do this if it helps at all. I will do some more research on this because I happen to be familiar with a couple of right wing comedians from the old days. People who they were like regular comedians. Like there's a guy named Evan Sayet. Have you heard that name?
No.
I don't think you would have. But he's a comic who used to be. I was friends with him back in the old days, and then he comes into the improv 15 years ago and just starts saying about how horrible the liberals are, and it's like.
Did he find out that you were Jewish?
Well,
it takes a long time. I mean,
most people hang
out with you for like 10, 15 years, and then they're just like, what? What do you mean?
I think he's Jewish.
Passover.
Though.
What?
He might be Jewish. There's a lot of right wing. It's a lot of right wing Jews.
Who else? Who else from that era were conservative comedians?
Well, that's the thing I'm trying to think about. These are people who nobody that. That's it. I mean, I can't think of any other names.
Well, Dennis Miller. I mean, but.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, people sort of who. Like, Dennis Miller, he's just looking at facts. You know, I mean, Dennis Miller, he's gone off the deep end as one example of that. But I mean, there's no. First of all, right wing comedy is impossible. You can't have comedy based on celebrating.
I think we just watched Jim Brewer really skew Anthony Fauci by saying that only cockatoos say his name.
It was also a very that's the noise I've heard in dinosaur animations when the pterodactyl comes down. Oh,
that is a very much Jim Brewer. He's doing that.
I mean,
bit.
Is this really a good impersonation of a cockatoo? Can we play that again and get some of the, let's deconstruct some of the joke. It is, the premise is cockatoo and then the punchline is just words. And then more cockatoo. Let's watch this.
In a coal mine, you have the cockatoo in a pandemic, I think.
There you go.
You can't analyze this stuff. You just have to let it wash over you.
You know what a cockatoo is? A cockatoo.
That's a pterodactyl.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You're absolutely right, Emma. That is not a cockatoo.
I love how most of the wives there have to look at their husband to see if they're allowed to laugh.
And that's what everyone's become. Little cockatoos staring at the
screen. Hold on, pause it for 1 second. Pause it. Leave it up. Find jobs that don't require COVID-19 vaccines at timetofreeamerica.com.
This is so good.
Wow. All right, yeah, keep going.
Maybe
I
you'd
hear
like
more
to sell hydrochloroquine door to door. There's many opportunities for you.
And figures, facts and figures. Dr. Fauci.
Is that what Dr. Fauci sounds like? I don't think so, Sam.
Oh, I think he's...
Trust the science.
They had to edit that, Sam. That's why they got the audience view.
They had to edit the funniest parts of this.
Specialist, numbers going up, One mask, two masks, fascinated, double fa-
I wonder if what I find interesting about the his stylings here is that when he says, when he gets too deep into actually saying the words, and I guess the premise is that a cockatoo, does that repeat? Is that like a parrot? Is he saying that that we just mindlessly parrot what we see on TV?
I think he really is making up. I don't think that has any cockatoo connection. Can someone, does a cockatoo make a cockatoo sound at least?
Cockatoos apparently don't talk.
Cockatoos don't talk. Okay, so it's really he. Okay. Well, we got. He meant parakeet.
But he still has to ask the audience if they know what a cockatoo is. That's how insecure this guy is. He still has to go. Anybody familiar with cockatoos? Well, then you're gonna love this.
So the idea is that, like, and I like the fact that, like, when he says things that don't get a response, he's got to actually work
the pterodactyl.
He's got to work it even harder. Like, he's really got to, he's probably like has in his mind, having done this so many times, he probably knows that, like, if I lose them, I've got to go to this. If I'm on a roll, I can just do this. But if I'm completely dying, I got to do.
You know, I think, you know, you may have decoded the Jim Brewer.
I think
secret.
That's the formula.
Yeah.
He could do like Gallagher had like Gallagher 2, his brother, go around and do his act. I feel like there's an opportunity here. You could do a tour where you were like a Jim Brewer tribute comic.
I'm beginning to think he's the only comic on this thing, right? That he's the comic.
I'm starting to get sense that, yeah, that's the case.
Yeah, it's America. Because if you look at that thing of the other people speaking there, it's Flynn. There's no other comic. There's no other.
Well, he's loosening the crowd up before, you know, like in the interim between Don or Eric Trump and Michael Flynn coming on.
Where did the pillow guy have his horrible thing? Was that Texas? He had a horrible thing too.
Yeah,
right?
I don't know where that was. That was
South Dakota, I thought.
That was in Sioux Falls.
Yeah.
We got a couple of IMs. Weed Scientist says Harlan Williams is a big funder of paramilitary death squads. and he goes on to say, and then Fierce Deity says, wait till you get to his dynamite quote, cancel culture is like a great blue heron bit.
Matt sent something in Slack that I feel like we need to, because this is such a good call.
Oh, well, it's the wrong clip, but it reminded me of Dane Cook doing his dinosaur stuff. But yeah, it's pretty much identical to Dane Cook just gooning around the
dinosaur. I remember that special.
Handouts to the wealthy. Pirates.
I mean, that's the thing is you could do like a left wing Jim Brewer. You just put in like, you know, seize the means of production.
Yeah, or you could do one that's making fun of them where it's like, I can't do the impression, but gets upset about Dr. Seuss and stuff like that. Dr. Seuss is canceled.
Mr. Potato Head, Mr. Potato Head. Ha!
And he is the luckiest, except for Joe Piscopo.
He's going to get millions of dollars.
He is the luckiest. What's that?
I'm going to get millions of dollars. I'm going to do this.
No, because you don't – see, you can, it doesn't look sincere coming from you.
Are you kidding?
You're mocking the character.
No, I'm not mocking the character. I'm totally into the
character. Mocking the character.
And that's right. Like with Jim, you like worry about him a little bit, and that's why it's
Hey, anybody seen a parrot anywhere? Polly wants a handout. Polly wants a handout.
Is it? It's really a lot of people go, and the same reason why you go to like a, you know, a car race. Or, you know,
yeah.
You know, like, see, like, maybe he's going to have a stroke. This one time he does it and you think, like, he's going to have a stroke. Yeah, I feel like Jim Brewer probably has not been taking care of himself in a lot of different ways.
well, you know, he's a voracious reader. So a lot, you know what I'm saying? He's out of the loop.
See, comedy's the only way to learn. it really is. Well, kudos to Jim Brewer. I mean,
kudos to Jim Brewer. And it's just unbelievable. Him and Chappelle, and it's frightening to me.
I feel like the Chappelle thing is coming from a different place. Than
Brewer. No, well, Chappelle's funny. Chappelle's funny.
Right. And
actually, some people would. I never saw Half Baked. So some people claim that Jim Brewer can be. He's never made me laugh.
I watched that recently. I feel like he's the worst part of that movie.
Yeah, I mean, he's funny if you're like 12, I think. Or, you know, like...
he said what passed me the joint.
Exactly.
I'm wasted.
Exactly. That is funny if you're, you know,
it's like
seventh grade.
Yeah. It reminds me of those Adam Sandler movie types.
That's right. It's a low-rent Adam Sandler.
He's super, super high... He can really play a high guy well.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
It's one of his attributes. But I think, you know, what's going on with Chappelle is different than what's going on with Brewer. I think Chappelle is driven by,
ego.
A megalomania. With Brewer, I think it's like he's on the God Squad and he's realizing, like, this is a ticket. For him, and he can't
be on the God Squad. You can't just, I mean,
oh yeah,
you yeah. think he's gonna hop on? I don't even think
he drops faith in there quite a bit. If you listen to any interview that he's done and you listen to him for more than like 5 minutes, that starts to come up, and maybe that's what got him off the juice.
Yeah, it's also very funny, that kind of material.
Yeah. So, Andy, I guess this is just bringing up when are you going on tour for something like
I'm not.
This?
I'm not. I can't do it. I can't do it. Am I going to fly for a one-nighter in Lincoln, Nebraska and catch a variant?
So Omicron! Omicron!
I don't know, Sam. You know, it really is like talking to an old man who's afraid to breathe. I keep postponing my jury duty. I just don't want to. I don't think it's time. I haven't been on a plane. You know, let's keep it.
You've been boosted, though, right?
Oh, three. I have three Moderna shots. In fact, the third Moderna shot I got, I'm not kidding, it was bigger than the original Moderna shot. I had 102. I got sick. I mean, I'm not like saying like an anti-vaxxer. I'm just saying,
You got vaccine injured.
No, I mean, I am ready to go. There's nothing that can stop me. But no, I don't think I'm going out. Maybe in the summer. How about you? Where are we taking our version of the American Faith Tour?
Well, we are actually on January to celebrate January 16th. We're doing a live Majority Report. Now you got to be vaccinated to come in. You got to get, we're going to probably wear masks in there. I don't know if we're going to wear masks on the stage, but we're going
to be vaccinated. Got to be vaccinated to get in.
Got to be vaccinated. Don't pass COVID. Don't pass COVID, says the bird. I almost think that like maybe the U.S. government should actually just promote vaccinations that way.
Right. You don't want what
time
this guy
to actually
has.
Get a shot. Time to get a shot.
I love it when he gets down to the level of creeps like Dr. Drew when he got in trouble. I love when he got in trouble and had to apologize because he has always had the veneer of the medical profession to cover.
Oh, I've heard I know some people who worked on his
celebrity rehab.
Yep. And they said it was one of the most despicable things I've ever, 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 ever been around.
Well, just the fact that someone would buy the show Celebrity Rehab is pretty despicable.
My understanding is that, let me say this in a way that...
doesn't get you sued?
Exactly. My understanding is that this person, anyways, felt like there was serious manipulation of the contestants that was geared less towards their recovery and more towards creating, you know, drama.
Yeah, just like the Facebook algorithms. It's the exact same thing. What can we do to make them more desperate? and more on the verge. The other thing that's weird is that he used to go on K-Rock, Dr. Dre. I just can't believe – I think he's gotten so progressively worse, even though he was never
right. –
he's always, I think, a phony.
Well, I think that must have been the case. And I think, you know, to a certain extent, like this is, you know, we see this in all of these different industries, you know, the intense desire for celebrity and cash.
That's what ruined Dr. Phil. You know what I mean? He was.
We're going to see that with Dr. Oz very shortly, too.
Oh, my God. Now, I did hear Dr. Oz at least is a good surgeon, even though he's seems to be a horrible.
He was a good surgeon, but apparently after the surgery stuff, which it seems to have been a while back, there's a lot of reporting on how he provides not terribly sound medical advice on his TV show.
You just take for a few weeks, every day would be, you take a piece of chicken, you put it in a thing, you stick it behind your ear, you will not be blind. Your blindness will go away.
Andy? Emma stepped out for a moment, but and she's back in time to
say goodbye.
Say adieu, yes.
Adieu. Quel dommage.
Adieu. Adieu.
Adieu. I'm a French cockatoo.
Now, how much cockatoo work do you guys do on Thought Spiral?
On Thought Spiral, we do a lot of wacky voices.
Is that right?
We was named the number one podcast for people over 59.
Is that right?
Podcast by white with white Jews.
White Jews over the age of 59, number one podcast.
Yeah, yeah. It's flying off. The other thing is, don't forget that you can still you can get me as a cameo for the holiday season.
Oh,
$35.99.
That's a
is
very
that what it is
cameo price.
Is that a good price, Emma? Because I really actually believe, I'm not saying I'm doing God's work, but I think I'm making people happy for
$35.99. That's worth it.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. I mean,
would it kill either one of you two to buy something for your...
I have a feeling that you may be getting a request from me.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. So that's that's what I'm looking for. So that's, I'm looking for ways not
how
to
many
leave
cameos
house.
Are you doing a day now?
I don't know if I can tell you how many I've done completely. I have done. It will. It also tells you how much you made total.
$75.
I have made a total of $8,262.
Whoa! At $35.
Yeah.
Damn, you should do cameo. I feel like you'd get to say personalized things to people. Although that's kind of what you do with the IMs. People, you know, trick you into saying nasty.
Give it away for free.
309. I've done 309 cameos.
Wow.
And it's the only time I've ever gotten 5-star ratings. I never got them in comedy clubs.
No, with the cameo, you do a great job. I would do a cameo, but I'm only going to do it for $80,000 per cameo.
$250 to cameo. Brian Cox from Succession is $689.
He's a Shakespearean actor, so.
Yeah. I can't believe he's on here. I love looking at like the comparative prices on here.
I got to check that out. I've never done that. Andy Kindler, it is always, always a huge pleasure to have you on the program.
I love you, and I really appreciate you guys having me on. It almost makes me cry sometimes. I really love this show.
Have a great New Year's, and of course, a Merry Christmas. I know you.
Yes, I love Christmas.
Christmas.
Yeah, I'm a huge Christmas fan.
Have a great
Dickens.
New Year's. We will see you in 2022.
Absolutely. I'll be sending you all my new calendar.
Oh, like an advent calendar or just like...
Oh, no, just Jewish.
Oh, okay. Calendar, Jewish holidays. Huh. Andy Kindler, ladies and gentlemen. Thank
Bye,
you.
Bye, everybody. Bye, love Emma. You. I love you. I love you. Bye.
Love you too, buddy.
It's a pleasure.
All right, folks. Going to head into the fun half.
Oh, I would have waited for my break, but I thought...
Well, that's all right. We'll take a quick head there. Don't forget, you can support this program by becoming a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. We got merch for the holidays, shop.majorityreportradio.com. You can IM the show at Majority App. Matt, what's happening in the Matt Lekian media universe?
This weekend for Left Reckoning patrons only, David Griscom and I are doing the first in our series of Vladimir Lenin readings. So check that out, patreon.com/Left Reckoning.
Fantastic. All right. See you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun.
Oh, no. Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
The alpha males are back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back.
I take all of it to my throat.
Alpha males are back.
Snowflake says what?
The alpha males are back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back.
Oh no, Sam Cedar, what a fucking nightmare!
Yeah, or a couple of them, just put them in rotation.
DJ Denner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough for the breaks to do that.
That's fucking nonsense.
See white people doing drugs that look worse than normal white people, and all white people look disgusting.
And the alpha males,
psych, fuck them.
Snowflake says what?
What?
Snowflake says what?
A hell of a lot of bang. A hell of a lot of bank. Okay. I'm making stupid money. Hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank.
All lives matter. Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back. And the Africans are black African. And the alpha males are black. And the Africans are back.
When you see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keeping it 100.
Can't knock the hustle.
Come on! Fuck them.
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday! Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back. Africans are black. Alpha males are black. Africans are back.
Come on! Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy.